What is up, Kangaroo Chasers? On this one, we catch up with our friend from the Lebanese Rugby League, Mr. Nayef Abisad. I'm Michael Carboni. This is episode 85 of the Chasing Kangaroos podcast.
You're listening to Chasing Kangaroos, the rugby league podcast for fans who are passionate about seeing the game played in more places.
Before we catch up with Nayef, my man, my friend, the big guy, the voice that you're all here to listen to, the biggest tiger, Tigrove, how are you?
Yeah, I'm good. Digicel Tigrove, I'm all over the world at the moment, everywhere but Sydney. Tigers across the world. I'm good. I'm feeling great. Rugby league's still here. It's still clear. It has so many different things happening all over the world.
I thought you were going for another rhyme. Near, clear, dear.
No, I left it alone. Well, I watched too much Simpsons, so I was going to say near, clear, we don't want any more bears. But everybody knows I'm a big Bears fan. Look, I'm good, man. You know how we always talk about the NRL? The NRL has a constant soap opera storyline. There's always something happening. Well, that's what Australian media always talks about. There's always something crazy happening.
Yeah.
If they just took a step back and saw that rugby league's more than the NRL, they'd see that there's actually a trillion stories all happening, positive and dramatic, that happen all over the world. Like, we're going to get to some of our golden points, but I'm loving it, mate. I'm excited to see all of the things that are happening. All of the New South Wales Cup things are starting to wrap up. The NRL is starting to wrap up. Some of the European things are starting to gear up. Feeling good.
It's sensational. We saw Serbian rugby league kick off over the weekend once again, which was great. You mentioned a few. I'm hoping the NRL, like, I'm done with the NRL. Like, bring on the semi-finals now. Our teams are done. Just bring on the semi-finals and that's it. We can sort of fast forward the next 2 weeks. But you mentioned as well the Tigrove, the Tigers, the Lay Tigers from Digicel Cup, mate.
Yes.
Spoiler alert, they lost their first game of the season. But if you haven't listened to Matty Church and his Digicel Cup wrap-up, hit pause, go back, do that 5 minutes every week, and it's coming to a conclusion with just one more round to go after this one. So they're almost at semi-final time as well. But yeah, the Tigers, I think we jinxed them, mate, because we've been talking about...
No.
You don't think so?
No. This is everyone always loves the loss that we had to have. And so that was... They just needed to, get a bit of hunger back in their belly because it was too easy.
Well,
and so this is a good one.
I was kind of hoping they'd wait one more week before their loss, because, of course, your Tigers are playing my team, the Port Moresby Viper, to close the season before the finals. And I'm almost, like, I'm hesitant to do this because I normally only make sandwich bets when I know I'm going to win. But I'm not confident about this one. But Matty Church has pretty much challenged us to the bet.
Oh, yeah.
And I think it's got to happen, right? Sandwich bet. Tigers.
100%. And this is, the Tigers have now just given you, they've opened the door. So this is a chance. There's a chance that you win.
So the Heller Wigman have shown the rest of the PNG Digicel Cup how to beat the Tigers. And hopefully Port Moresby Viper were watching.
Now, I think if my memory of Maddie's podcast last week, it was the Tigers had the best attack but the second best defense. And they played the team with the best defense. But I think the fourth best attack. So defense wins premierships, we've been told over and over again, and it might be happening right now in the Digicel Cup. But you said before, gear up, and I just want to point a quick spotlight on how pretty you looked today on Instagram in all of your Italy gear. You were geared up today as well.
Mate, just showing support for the heritage, for the family.
Yep.
And it's pretty cool. It was nice gear as well. So a big thank you to I think we mentioned it last week as well, but thank you to Furla and Furl and all Leo and Orazio and everyone there for sending me some Italian kit. And I'll wear it with pride, hopefully. Well, hopefully you've got your Filipino kit as well from the Filipino guys. And if they do end up playing a test match later this year, or probably next year, we'll have to get out there and kit up and have another sandwich bet.
And if anyone's sitting there super jealous about all of the great international merch we've got, you've just got to go to mascotbrands.com.au, 2020 Vision for some dollars off. Support such a great company and great cities, great countries all around the world.
I love how you did that, Big T. Like you've been my co-host for almost a year. It's almost the end of the season. Like we're probably going to wrap up season two very soon and get ready for season three. But like it's normally we like sneak in Mascot Browns wherever we can. But I feel like you were very planned this week, and Phil
Thanks,
and Steve
mate.
From mascotbrowns.com, mascotbrowns.com.au will be very happy.
Well, also, I've recently had Steve chat to me privately in the DMs, not just in a group, so that made me swoon.
You mentioned that every week.
Yeah. I'm so excited by it.
Yeah.
And Phil also messaged me privately on the weekend asking me if I wanted to come to football with him, which
Did
was
you
so lovely.
Did you go?
Well, I went away this weekend without the family, so I felt compelled not to take Thursday night off as well. So, but he was very lovely about that. And I told him that I'm actually much better company when I'm not watching the Tigers, so I'm happy to go and watch Manly play or whoever he wants, other than the Tigers.
It's a date. The nicest man in rugby league, making friends all over the world now, biggest Tiger. And, mate, speaking of friends all over the world, I got to sit down with one of my good friends a couple of weeks ago, and it's the chat that we're going to listen to tonight after our golden points. It's Nayef Abisad. So you might remember him last time we spoke. It was the official International Rugby League podcast, episode one. So if you want to go back, listeners, if you haven't heard that yet, it was out last October. It's actually on our Chasing Kangaroos list on our back catalog between episodes 40 and 41. You'll find the six episode short mini series, the official International Rugby League podcast. Mm-hmm. And on that first episode, we spoke to Nayef Abisad. The CEO, the president, the man of the Lebanese Rugby League Federation over there. And look, we had a great chat. I was amazed back then. He was part of like an ensemble cast. We had a few others as well, but I was very impressed by Nayef because back at the time, you might remember Big T, but there was a bit of a storm going on with Lebanese Rugby League on a national front and on a domestic front as well. So a lot of there was a few domestic issues over there between the clubs, and there's a little bit of controversy and clubs like not agreeing with the federation, and there was just a bit of miscommunication between a couple of parties. And the Lebanese heritage players over here, led by Roberto Ferrar and a few others, they were boycotting parts of their jersey, like they wrapped bandaged up part of their jersey and things like that. There was a lot of controversy, but and I didn't know what to expect when I first met Nayef, but he handled himself very well. He explained everything very well. There was no animosity between he and the heritage players. He was actually like quite calm about the whole situation, handled himself well and explained it all very well. And I was just so impressed, especially for a guy who like English is his third language. He did very well. And, you know, it was great to sort of catch up with him again. Unfortunately, the circumstance is not so great. So our listeners will be aware of the explosion in Beirut not long ago. And basically what happened was like the Lebanese Rugby League have put together a GoFundMe page to support first responders after that Beirut explosion. So I reached out to Nayef to see if there's anything we can do to help. And we decided it was a good opportunity as well to catch up and talk all things Lebanese Rugby League. So this episode's all about that. We're gonna push that GoFundMe page. You'll find the link in the show notes. We'll talk about it a little bit. And Nayef will tell me a little bit about his story, what happened, because he lives very close to where the explosion was, and very lucky, I suppose, not to have any family members hurt or anything like that. It would have been a very devastating time to sort of be in the area. But we spoke about that, and then we went on to speak about all things domestic and national rugby league for Lebanon. So really good chat. I really enjoyed it, and I'm glad the listeners and yourself, Big T, are going to get to listen to that tonight or today, whenever they're listening.
Exciting. You want to do some golden points, sir?
Mate, let's do golden points. And I think tonight it's more going to be like golden discussions, because there's really two golden points, one each, and there's some big things happening in rugby league. But I will remind our listeners, if you're not following along already, follow Chasing Kangaroos on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, because if you like our golden points, you'd love following along, because there's so much more that we can't possibly fit into these short intros, you know, that's on our socials. So follow along and learn more about the world of rugby league. But Big T, why don't you start us off?
Yeah, mine isn't a big discussion. Mine is an extra little one. So should I start with my little one or do the little one at the end?
Yeah, do the little one. Go for it. Do both.
Okay. It's a bunch of little bears. So first of all, golden point to the Northern Territory. And so the Litchfield Bears, which is my favourite club on the whole of Northern Territory, they're celebrating the 30th year, have just finished their weekend. And as we all know, the local football's wrapping up. And so they have a whole bunch of teams that are either made the grand final or just about to make the grand final. Under-18s, under-12s, B grade, A grade. They've got two girls teams, 15s and 17s.
Wow.
They've got under-12s and under-14s, all either in a grand final or just about to make the grand final. And speaking of Bears that are doing a great job, our favourite New South Wales team, the North Sydney Bears, just smashed the Western Suburbs Rugby League Football Club, the Devils, Western Suburbs Devils, 44-0. So they're now semi-final bound. And the North Sydney Bears women's team also unfortunately beat my West Tigers team in the women's Harvey Norman Women's Premiership. And so they are also one game away from a grand final after a 16-4 win. The Bears are doing it all over Australia at the moment.
That's crazy. Bears everywhere. That's incredible. And don't tell our mate Albi Tellerico that the North Sydney Bears are your favourite New South Wales team.
Right. Yeah, mine. And you like the Jets, and so we've covered everyone.
There you go. All good. Sounds great. Let's go the go the Bears in those lower grades. Everyone loves them.
Yeah.
What else you got, man?
Well, I want to talk about, as a global ambassador, I want to talk about Toronto.
Yeah. Big one. Yeah.
What have you seen? I mean, I saw a bunch of different open letters that have been penned. One really like impassioned one by Josh McCrone, but what's the vibe there? Because I think I've missed everyone actually now turning off the David Argyle. When did that happen?
Where have you been, mate? But
I knew that.
No, go for, what did you know? Tell us what you knew.
Well, I knew that he couldn't keep going, but I thought he asked the Super League if they can give them some cash money, and they said no. And so he was just like, well, I can't keep going with I can't keep just making stuff happen without anyone without any money coming in. So, sorry, guys, we're going to need to pause.
David Argyle basically walked away from the club. Well, not walked. Well, yeah, he sort of disappeared. And I think I told you this, Big T, but I actually reached out to him when this all started to see if he wanted to be on the show, and he said yes. But then he disappeared, and I was like, wasn't sure where he disappeared to. And it turns out no one really sort of knew where he was, and he's sort of like, yeah, disappeared from the world of rugby league, I suppose. But this is where I guess there was the 3, 4, 5 new consortiums that were looking into purchasing.
I remember that.
So you've seen all that. You saw like New York come in and out, and there's people.
I remember you telling me last week. Yeah, I remember me asking last week if it was going to be New York or the week before, and you said no, it's this other consortium. So I remember that all happened, but I just thought we all still liked David Argyle. He just couldn't make it happen anymore.
Well, what's
turns out we don't.
What's basically happened is the Wolfpack have their preferred consortium bid. They've all been introduced to the RFL, and it's all been made quite public now, which is good. So it's Carlo Lavalsi, I think his name is. I don't know if you've heard of him before, but big businessman. Have you heard anything about this guy?
Not that I haven't just kind of read the newspaper briefly, but I mean, I know him as well as I know David Argyle. So what do you know about him?
So Carlo is basically a bit of like a beauty product, like multimillionaire. So he like helps, I guess, manufacture. He owns companies that manufacture and import products all over the world, like imports into Woolworths in Australia and places in the UK and the US, of course, as well. They're North American based. And he was, as far as I'm aware, he was an original shareholder in the Wolfpack as well. So he was friends with David Argyle as well, but not too sure what happened there. But he's sort of come in with his new company and saved the day. So it's now up to the RFL and the Super League to see if they're going to let the Wolfpack back and under what conditions.
Yeah, but he's quoted saying that he's choosing not to speak to David because of the things that he did. Like, he's really, really angry with him.
I think a lot of people are. Like, you saw the open letter from Josh McCrone. You mentioned it earlier. So, you know, a lot of players haven't been paid. So I guess there's, like, ever since this sort of happened, I feel like the first reaction was, oh, no, this is terrible for, like, an expansion club to go down. Then the second reaction was like, oh, holy shit, like, it's a bit of a mess, like, financially. This hasn't been handled right, and people started to uncover some things. Then after that, it became about the players who weren't getting paid, and you know, we've seen a few distressed players who are now slowly getting contracts elsewhere, which is a good thing. But now Carlo and his company have come in as the preferred group, the preferred prospective new owners, and it does seem positive now. It just we need to hope it goes the right way. So, Big T, what do you hope happens now that Carlo and the new group are talking to the Super League and the RFL?
Well, from my understanding, they're going to try and pay all of the commitments for 2020, which is already amazing that they would buy this company and then pay everyone that hasn't yet been paid. So I love that. I really hope that they have a bit of a Warriors moment. You know how the New Zealand Warriors had to go through all this stuff and then they banded together?
Yeah.
One thing that Josh says in his open letter is that he feels like he's part of a family, and even after all of this craziness and turbulence, he calls it, he really wants to stick strong with the Wolfpack. So there's a very good chance that the fans and the football department come together and really build something great out of this, and hopefully, you know, make a finals run next year just to try and make a bit of a fairy tale thing out of it. What are you thinking?
I've no doubt that the fans will back them and get behind them. And it was good to see Josh McCrone come out in support of the new administration or potential new administration. He said he'd happily lead the team as captain in 2021. It'll be interesting to see what's left of their player roster. Like, does Sonny Bill come back? Does Ricky Lotelli come back? Does Blake Wallace come back? Like, who's left, you know? And if some of those players are now gone, then how are they going to rebuild a roster in time? It's going to be interesting to see what happens with COVID next. Like, presumably, it may still be difficult. When we spoke about this before with Ottawa Aces as well, it may still be difficult to travel from Toronto to the UK next year. So that's something to consider. What will happen? What will plan B be? Where will the team be based and all that, those sorts of things if they can compete? But the big question really is, like, what's Super League and the RFL going to do? Like, will they feel the need to punish Toronto Wolfpack for pulling out of the competition this year? Because that seems to be what, like, people are calling for a punishment, right? But I kind of disagree with the punishment, because I feel like the circumstances that they faced are so different to anything else. And it's not like they pulled out in a normal season. Like, they pulled out in a COVID season where financially, you know, obviously there was some financial difficulty already and there was a bit of financial mismanagement, but it really all came to shit, for want of a better word, when they couldn't play home games and things like that. So
yeah.
I think a few things need to be negotiated. I think Carlo has been quoted to say that they want things to be fair. If, you know, they want to be able to earn their share of TV rights and things like that as well, or they want other teams to pay their own way to Toronto and things like that. So, look, it's going to be interesting to see where those negotiations go. It may very well be that Sky Sport, the TV rights holders, are the ones that sort of decide, hey, Toronto and expansion is very important to us and to this TV deal. So, therefore, if you want our money, you need to bring Toronto back. That's a realistic possibility, that something like that could happen. But it might be just as possible that they get relegated back to the championship as some form of punishment. So, mate, to be honest, I don't know how it's going to go down, but I definitely feel, and I know you were positive the whole way through, big man, like, you always knew that, or you always felt in your big heart that that they would be back in some capacity. I at least at the moment feel better about all of this. And I think that the Toronto, you know, while I may have thought a few weeks ago that the Wolfpack may be dead, they seem to have been resuscitated, and I feel like they're back, and whatever the challenges ahead, I think they're going to go on to bigger and better things once again.
Yeah, I'm with the pack. I'm with them.
That was a very long monologue by me. I've never done that before.
No, well, it's also because you're a very smart and insightful young man, and we're all really here to hear you.
Thanks for calling me young. See, when you called me young, everyone said no. Big T's lying. He's joking. He's got no idea.
No. They saw you and your amazing hair on your Instagram feed. We all know that you're a young man.
Good job. Good stuff. Good stuff.
Now, I'm technically winning 2-0, big guy, so you better run with something.
Well, I've got a golden point. And look, my golden point, like I said, it's a golden discussion, because there's probably like 4 or 5 mini golden points in here. So it's going to be enough for me to take it out, mate. But golden point Europe. So the RLEF annual general meeting took place over the weekend via Zoom. So 30 nations got together via Zoom, which was, you know, the way of the world at the moment. Zoom doing some wonderful things. I feel sorry for Skype sometimes. I really missed out on the business opportunities.
Yeah, you're right. And that was a much bigger thing before. I mean, Skype was a thing. And then all of a sudden, Zoom just launched at the exact time that we all needed it during COVID. It was crazy. I never thought of that.
Right place, right time for Zoom, I think. But anyway, that's a discussion for other podcasts maybe. But the RLEF AGM happened, and quite a few things came out of it. There was some interesting discussion points and some interesting elections and votes and things like that. But I'll start off firstly, and stop me at any point, Big T, and interject with your comments. But basically, the first thing was the higher domestic quotas for European tests was there was a motion put forward by the Serbian Rugby League for that, and it was voted in by an overwhelming response. So basically what this means is that we're going to see, when it comes to like Euro A, B, Cs and D sort of levels, we're going to see more domestic players instead of heritage players, especially the lower down that you go. So obviously at that A level or that World Cup level for European sides, you're going to see more heritage players because it's important that professionals play against professionals. Otherwise, we have all sorts of things like injuries. But the lower down the scale you go, we're going to see more and more domestic players. So it's going to be fairer. So basically, the nations that develop their talent are going to be rewarded as opposed to those who, you know, rely heavily on domestic players, which is going to be better for some than others. But it's definitely going to encourage more domestic activity, domestic development, and that's really what we want to see out of Europe, especially at the moment.
Especially if you're part of that European league that they've just started, Euro 13s, it's going to be good for those people because they'll have a lot more domestic games that are happening.
Euro 13's interesting. It's interesting you mentioned that. I wasn't sure if we're going to talk about this tonight, but I haven't heard anything about Euro 13s for a while. They've sort of been on the quiet side, so their social media's been a little bit quiet, and I've asked a few questions here and there privately and haven't had much of a response, so I'm not too sure what the story is with Euro 13s, to be honest with you, big man.
It's the wolf pack of Europe, mate. It'll come good.
Maybe. Look,
just
I'm not,
be patient.
Look, maybe, but I don't know. Look, I'll be like, we laugh about it, but to be honest with you, like, I'm not sure. I'm not going to call a time of death on it. And I hope we hear about something soon because, you know, there was some positive things about it and, you know, the concept was good. But the longer we don't hear anything about Euro 13s, the more concerned and worried I am for the concept. So, but we'll see what happens. And hopefully they're just being quiet because they're very busy trying to organise some things. But, mate, back to the RLEF AGM. And there was a couple of board spots up for election. So congratulations to Graham Thompson, friend of the show, who remains on the board. And he's definitely a friend of the show. You can listen to him on episode 45 for season two. I think it was the first episode with you as a co-host, Big T, apart from our double header, but episode 45, it was called 2020 Vision. So go back and listen to that if you haven't already. But Graham remains on the board of the RLEF. So congratulations, Graham. Unfortunately, friend of the show also, Red Star Belgrade boss, Colin Clayweg, he just missed out on being re-elected to the RLEF board, which is disappointing. You can go back and listen to him in episode 36, Footy in the Land of the Trebojevic, friend of the show, Colin Clayweg. But what I do understand is, although he's off this board, he'll still be obviously involved in Serbia and Red Star, but I understand he may now be taking up a role as chair of a steering committee, which will be exploring a potential European club competition. So not to be confused with Euro 13s, this will be that professional Euro competition that the RLEF spoke about when Euro 13s was first launched. And he's sort of been in charge of this for a little while. It's been his pet project. In fact, he spoke about it on episode 48 of our podcast as well, big man, how to say dragon in French. So go back and listen to these. I'm going to mention a few pods, so go back and listen to these if you haven't already. But I think
Colin's killing this back catalogue,
mate,
thing. Well done.
Just advertising, mate. It's you promoting Mascot Browns. I'm promoting the back catalogue. But we're getting organised after almost the end of two seasons. But yeah, Colin, I think definitely the man for this job, and I think he's going to do some great things, and hopefully he can find some key learnings, and the potential European club competition will be in full motion before we know it. Now,
God, I would love that.
How cool would it be? Very sad to see Colin off the board, but another friend of the Chasing Kangaroos podcast has been elected to the board. So Welsh Rugby League Chairman, Mr. Brian Jullif. So you can listen to him all the way back on episode one of the official International Rugby League podcast, the very same one where Mr. Nayef Abusad, who you'll hear from a little bit later, so they were both on that first episode. It was a great chat. So, Brian, congratulations. He's now on the RLEF board. So, some exciting elections there, mate.
Yeah, you know, politics isn't particularly interesting, but this is like rugby league politics. So it's great to see people getting a chance to doing some things. And it's great to see Colin still involved because we know he's great and a great person to have around rugby league and its organisation. So, congratulations to everyone, and I hope everyone is happy with the work that they do.
The biggest key learning I got from all of that, big guy, is that everyone is friends of Chasing Kangaroos, no matter who they are. If they're coming in, coming out, if they're on the board, off the board, whatever. They're friends of the show. So that's...
So if you want to do well in European Rugby League, the first thing is to call Michael Carboni and see if he can set you up with a spot.
Well, how'd that work out for you, Big T? You getting there? We're getting there. You're going to get your, the award for services to rugby league?
That's right. On this, the day of your daughter's wedding, you're going to help me get an AOB.
The big one, though, and you've kind of, we've kind of mentioned this. We didn't really mention this last week, actually, sorry, but we've heard a bit about it. So there was an article on Total RL last week. I'm not sure if you saw it, Big Guy. And look, I'm going to start by saying I love the website Total RL. I love their forum. I don't comment on the forum, but I do read it every now and then to see what's going on. But there was an article last week doing the rounds. It was called Italians Press for Changed European Voting Rights. Did you read that?
Oh, yeah.
Basically, I don't know if you read the whole thing in detail, Big Guy, but they basically said that up to 9 countries, led by Italy, were going to back a resolution to change the constitution at the AGM to, quote, clean up an undemocratic voting process. So basically, to explain that and I know we're getting political again, but the way it currently works is nations like England and France have greater voting powers than affiliate members of the RLEF, for example. And together, the RFL, so who represent the UK, obviously, and the FFR, who represent France, have combined rights to veto any motions that they don't like or what have you. So basically, like, this article was suggesting that up to 9 countries are calling that whole process undemocratic. Now, look, views are my own, as you say all the time, Big T, but I kind of think the voting system's fair because I know it may, like in terms of numbers, there's 30 nations. So why should one nation, when you look at it like that on black and white paper, why should one nation have more votes or more power than another? But the thing is, like, there are, in terms of sheer number of players, the RFL and FFR like account for a huge majority of the RLEF like player base. A lot of the money does come from those two organisations. Like, they still fund a lot of the RLEF as well. So it's kind of only fair and democratic that they do get more of the voting rights. So, and look, the nations voted in favour of the old way as well. So it turns out the proposed resolution was heavily voted against. We would call it a shellacking, to use my words. I think only 2 nations voted in favour of the amendment. And to be honest, another reason why I'm calling out the article from Total RL as bullshit is that I don't think Italy even voted in favour. And they were like the article was all about Italy being this force for change and all that sort of thing. So it wasn't the case. So like I said, Total RL, love you guys, but that article, kind of rubbish. But yeah, so I don't know. That's all I'm going to say about the politics, big man.
Yeah, that's a pretty big swipe for you because if you're one of the nicest guys in rugby league as well. So that must have really... struck a chord with you that you'd want to come out and say that about them.
Man, we try and be very positive, especially about, like, at this level of rugby league, like, we try and be as positive as we can and share the news as best as we can. But sometimes I just read things and I don't know, like, I feel like there's not a lot of information out there about this sort of stuff. And I feel like you and I, we get to hear and speak to a lot of people that are involved in this sort of thing. So we know a little bit more than most. So when I read an article like that, I just think, like, fuck, like, we have a platform to set the record straight. And maybe, and look, maybe the person who wrote it just didn't understand the situation or didn't quite have the full picture. And, you know, I think maybe in the past, you know, anyone could have made mistakes like that. Maybe we have. But I just think, you know, it's our duty to kind of call it how we see it. And, you know, it's important because a lot of people listen to us for this sort of stuff. So... yeah, I'm not trying to be, you're calling me, maybe I'm not the nicest guy in rugby league or anything like that, but I want to be the most honest guy at this level.
I'm certainly not saying what you're saying, what you're doing is unfair or anything like that. I was just taken aback, but no, I agree with you. There's so little news out there that it's important to get the news right, and that one, in hindsight, doesn't look like it was on the money. But yeah, maybe they got a bum steer from one of their contacts or something. I'm not sure.
Potentially, and that happens. I'm sure that happens all the time at all levels of sport and rugby league in particular as well.
And journalism.
Final mini golden point from the RLEF AGM, Big Guy. This one is close to my heart as well. Very important, I think. So. This one comes from, there was a Americas and an MEA session of the RLEF as well. So basically, for anyone that doesn't understand it, currently there are 2 confederations under International Rugby League, and they are, of course, Asia Pacific Rugby League and the RLEF, the Rugby League European Federation. They pretty much look after everyone. And there was a time when that's all we needed, because most teams, most nations that played rugby league were in sort of the Pacific or in Europe. But as our listeners know, there are more and more American nations in particular, African nations in particular, that are playing the game, more and more Asian nations that are playing the game as well. So the game is spreading. And what has happened in the last few years is, if you're basically from North America, your nation fits into the European Federation, which sounds strange, but that's the only option they had. South Americans fit into the Asia Pacific. Central Americans, I think, go north. But they can sort of maybe sometimes choose. African nations go to the RLEF as well, except I think for South Africa, who go to Asia Pacific. So it's crazy, not crazy, but really there's, you know, there was no other way to do it. There was no other choice. You know, we had two confederations. So a big talking point over the last couple of years has been the need for two new confederations, namely the Americas Rugby League and the MEA Rugby League. So to give North America, South America, their own confederation, and give Africa and Middle East their own, Middle East Africa, their own confederation as well. There has been talk for a while. So like this is one of those things that people say, oh, it should be happening. Why aren't they doing it? They've been trying to do it for a number of years. And we've mentioned before as well, last year at the International Rugby League Congress, when they launched their rebrand, it did include four different coloured chevrons, which would represent the four eventual confederations, being Asia Pacific, Rugby League European, Middle East Africa and Americas. And that gained some more momentum at the RLEF AGM as well. So basically, the Americas nations, or the Americas nations from RLEF, got together. They voted in favour of an Americas Rugby League. I believe the MEA nations did the same thing as well. So what happens now? Again, it's all process and politics, as we know, Big T. But now there'll be a vote by the IRL, the International Rugby League, next week. I think it's the 24th, to appoint. And the decision they'll be making is whether or not it goes ahead. I think they will decide in favour of this going ahead. But what needs to happen next is they'll appoint a steering committee to explore the options moving forward. And we'll see what happens after that. Because, of course, with this sort of thing, the big issue is always money. Do we have enough money to support these initiatives? And as is often the case, we don't. So we need to be very careful about how we do it. But I think the time is right. It's going to be a good move for rugby league and for the Americas and MEA in particular. So some very positive signs, very positive steps coming out of the RLEF AGM Zoom conference over the weekend.
Chairman of the Americas, Nate Gladden. Can't wait.
He would love that. Hey, he's definitely got my vote, Nate Gladden. I don't know if he'd want such a job, such a responsibility, but I think
he gets could be the man for it.
He doesn't get
No.
Well, it could choose him. It'll choose him.
That's right. It's already chosen him.
We love you, Nate Gladden. But man, that's I'm golden pointed out. Like for me, like I said, it was all about, you know, there's a lot of other little stories in the rugby league world. Go follow us on the socials and check those out. But I really just wanted to focus my attention on what was going on in Europe, because we haven't been speaking much about Europe lately. So I just wanted to speak about that for a little while.
Your Twitter account is really just a veneer of you being a sad Panthers fan, but your Instagram account is incredible, and so I do wholeheartedly endorse everyone to get around Chasing Kangaroos on Instagram, because it's a fantastic source of information and great photos. Like, it's fantastic.
Like me wearing my Italia gear.
Well, it's that, but also just a shout out on trying to get Greek players and things like that. Anyway, I'm not going to give it away, because people should just go and look at the Instagram account. Yeah, even if you don't have Instagram, just get on it. And follow that one account, and you'll be a happier
person. Join Instagram, follow us, and bump up our numbers as well. That'd be great. All right, big man. Well, that's it from me this week, or that's it from us for Golden Points for this week anyway.
Yeah.
But stay on, guys, because the chat I had with Naif Abissad from Lebanese Rugby League, absolutely incredible. It's a little bit different to what we normally do, because obviously there was a little bit of a world news sort of component with the Beirut explosion. So yeah, different sort of interview. I enjoyed the conversation. I always enjoy chatting to Naif, and I hope you guys enjoy it too. So Big T, I'll see you next week, and fuck yeah, Nawari. All right, Kangaroo Chasers. Well, a very special treat today. We've got on the other line, all the way from Beirut in Lebanon, he's the CEO of the Lebanese Rugby League Federation, Mr. Naif Abissad. Welcome to Chasing Kangaroos.
Hello, how are you doing, Michael? It's always a pleasure to be with you.
Mate, it's great to speak again. And the last time we spoke was at the World Nines last year, which was incredible. But the last time you recorded a podcast with me was the very first episode of the official International Rugby League podcast, which was incredible. It was great to meet you that night with a few of the others as well. But I'm going to, if there's any listeners listening to this right now that haven't heard that yet, it is on the archives, on the Chasing Kangaroos archives. It's episode one of the official International Rugby League podcast, and you'll find it in between episodes 40 and 41 of the regular Chasing Kangaroos episodes. It was probably around last October, I believe. And it's important, if you haven't listened to that, to maybe go back and have a listen, because some of the things we're going to touch on today sort of build upon the things that Naif we spoke about last time. So it's just a bit of an important backstory. But there's another reason we're here. You're here with us today, mate. And obviously, it's a rugby league podcast. We're going to talk about rugby league, or at least for 99% of the time. But I think it's very important also to talk about sort of what's happened, not only in the world, but over in Beirut recently. And our listeners will remember very vividly, they would have seen footage from the Beirut explosion in August. For me, Naif, like, I saw it on the news, I saw it on the internet, I was horrified. For you, you were, you know, 20 kilometers away, you heard it. Tell us a little bit about the moment and what it was like and what sort of happened over there.
Yeah, it was kind of shocking, you know, like, and living in Lebanon, like, or being born and raised in Lebanon,
yeah,
lived, like, I'm almost 40 years in Lebanon, we're kind of unfortunately used to those kind of shock. But this one was a bit even bigger than we expected, you know. I was like, it was in the afternoon, I was at my home, and like, suddenly we heard the first explosion and suddenly another big explosion. And out of experience, because like, there was an explosion in 2005, it was like 500 meters away from me, it's like, first thing you do, you take up your phone and start calling, because like, within 5 minutes, maybe most of the calls might be jammed, because everybody will be using the network.
Yeah, well.
So the first thing I did is start calling my family to make sure that they are all right. And thanks God, personally, my family was safe, but unfortunately, a lot of fellow countrymen lost their life, or were in agony, or were yep. injured. You know, we all know it's like around 200 dead, and more than 6,000 got injured in that horrible event.
Yeah.
And the news starting getting you know, like, flooded, and we start getting those videos of the explosion. And like, the horror we saw, it was crazy, man. It was crazy. The next day, I went to my brother-in-law parents' house.
Yep.
It was very close to the explosion. We spent all day removing glass, shattered glass, and trying to patch some plastic on the windows and fixing stuff. You know, cleaning. It's like, you know, to get there, to walk among the rubbles and stuff, it's totally, like, a totally different experience, you know.
Yeah.
Like, you're visiting a city for the first time, you know, but usually, if you travel touristically to a city, you know, you feel that feeling that you're visiting for the first time. Maybe when you're traveling for tourism, you'll be happy, but if you're traveling, going through that, it's like going to Beirut for the first time and feel this horrible feeling inside of you. So it was crazy. And you can hear all the time, like, paramedics cars taking injured people, like,
yep.
Sirens all the time. Traffic was jammed because some of the main road got blocked. One of the main road to entrance to Beirut is just like 200 meters away from the explosion. So it was closed. It was crazy. On the ground, it was horrifying, Michael.
I can't even begin to imagine. And like you say, it must have been like not the city that you recognize, you know. It must have been insane. And I saw some footage and some photos of the people the day after, like, cleaning the rubble and all together. And it was, It was actually like heartwarming to see the people respond so quickly and in such a way. And it's a real testament to the people of Lebanon, the people of Beirut, you know, that you all got together and you're trying to help your fellow man and woman. And there's something special about that, you know, even in the tough times, that the people come together. And I kind of wonder, like, my first thought is, when you first heard the noise, what did you think it was? What was your first thought?
The first thought was, I knew it was an explosion, and but I didn't know where was it, you know, because it felt close, because, like, as I told you before, like, even in my house, I had the cover of the shutter went down.
Yeah,
it's like 20 kilometers. So I thought it was nearer. It was nearer than I expected.
Yeah,
I thought it was like maybe around Dubai or June, which is close, was very close to me. I never expected that big of an explosion to happen, like in Beirut Harbor, you know. So it's kind of like what when we start getting the picture and knew what happened. I cannot explain it, like, properly, find really the word, but like on a personal scale, I was born during the Lebanese war and the Lebanese war in 1980, and
yep,
kind of like lived until I was 11 in the civil war, Lebanese civil war. Then we had different wars, explosion, unrest in the country. It is a sad Lebanese story. Hopefully the future will be better. We'll always build on that or hope for that.
Yeah.
Maybe because we are used to those kind of events, unfortunately, in Lebanon, our reaction would be a bit different. To hopefully you never feel anything like that. But
yeah,
for example, for people who don't have this uncertainty or this instability in their country, we kind of like react fast, look at it, and know we're going to have to rebuild. We know we're going to have to fight again. It is always a setback after a setback, but we'll go through it. It's going to take some time.
Yep.
This one was like bigger than expected. It's going to take some time, but we're going to rebuild again.
Yep. Yep. I believe that too. And the beauty is, like I said, the people are behind it, and I want to know how we can get behind it as well. So the sad thing for me is, you know, we saw it all happen. We saw video footage that week, but since then we haven't heard much about it. The cameras aren't back to show us the rebuild or show us what's the aftermath or show us what's sort of going on now. But obviously there's still a rebuild happening, and it's going to take time, as you said. And I want to sort of shine a light on that and sort of, you know, the Chasing Kangaroos family, the rugby league family, it's a very special family, and we want to try and help as best as we can. So I understand the Lebanese Rugby League Federation, you guys have a fundraiser to help support the rebuild of Beirut. And did you want to share those details with us and let the rugby league family know how we can help or how we can support?
We established a fund to help the first responders, like me, because like at the first hours there was a lot of help, yep, coming to humanitarians, and like a lot of people donating food, clothes, building material and stuff. And we have the firefighters here in Lebanon are always the weakest link when it's come to funding. They are always the people who get the less funding. So we decided to help this, to help the firefighters, because honestly, they deserve it. Their peers lost their life, even though they were still, you know, searching the rubbles, trying to find survivors, trying to put up fire. So for say, like, hats off to those heroes that were working, and people would sometimes, you know, forget a bit about them. So there was a lot of donation going to a lot of NGOs, to a lot of causes, and we chose a certain cause. Hopefully we can help them rebuild, because also, even though they, not even though, it's like they lost a lot of lives, and yet also they lost materials. And if you can help, and if you can help the firefighters, those people with the right materials going to help people in the future and the rescue more people in the future.
Yep.
In any kind of example, in any kind of incidents, fires, you know, destruction, anything that that will happen. That's why we chose the firefighter for our cause.
Excellent. Well, we'll provide, there's a link where our listeners can support if they choose to. We'll provide that link in the show notes. And yeah, we do encourage the Rugby League family to, you know, even if you don't donate, maybe share it. And, you know, you never know, like, we've got to spread the word and there is still help that is needed. So yeah, let's support.
I would like to thanks in advance anybody who donate or anybody who shares or spread the word. We would be grateful and thank you.
Sensational, mate. Look, let's talk about rugby league. The reason we record this podcast, and I want to talk a little bit about domestic rugby league and international rugby league. A lot has happened since we last spoke, but also a lot hasn't happened since we last spoke because of this other worldwide problem, which is this COVID-19 pandemic. But let's go back to domestic rugby league in Lebanon. And last time we spoke, you guys held a pilot season. There were a few clubs involved at senior level, and a court case was coming to its conclusion. So there were some clubs that were on side with the Lebanese Rugby League Federation, and there were other teams that weren't. That's come to a conclusion now, and I believe everyone's sort of back together. Can you shed some light on that and let us know where all the clubs are right now?
Technically speaking, there's no such club that are on the side or outside. The Lebanese Rugby League Federation is owned by all those clubs.
Yep.
It's like to be you know, the federation. In our system, we are a sports NGO according to the Lebanese law. All the clubs form the general assembly for this federation. So there was like that dispute or something. I was like, I'm not gonna call it dispute. Maybe I'll call it misunderstanding or lack of communication between the board, all the clubs themselves, and everything. As you know, the investigation came and all the practices were cleared, you know, of any wrongdoing.
Yep.
But good news never travel. Always bad news travel faster.
Yeah. Yep.
So people didn't really react to it or knew about it. As I said from day one, we are always open to work with all the clubs. We have contact with one of the clubs, and it was a very positive talk, very, very positive talk with them. Hopefully we're going to sort things out very, very soon enough. And we'll be back on track that we're supposed to be on. We had contact with the clubs for this year for the championship, but still we are, the Minister of Youth and Sports suspending all official activities.
Yep.
Because of the pandemic, and we're hoping to see if we can have some unofficial activity. It's like some social event, but we also need to take in consideration the COVID pandemic, because we do not want to endanger anybody or anything. We're hoping that the cases drop a bit and we'll be able to manage that, because also it's not like even the explosion helped increase the rate of people affected by COVID-19.
Yes.
You believe it or not, you had like 12,000 or 15,000 people rushing to hospitals without being tested, without any
precaution. Yep.
Kind of also like help raise the number. So it's all depending. Now we are starting our negotiation with the universities to see if what's their program regarding their sports activity with the clubs. Also, we had few meetings with the clubs regarding that. It's all depend now on the decision of the Ministry of Youth and Sport when they're gonna allow us to restart or do all the activities we can.
Is there any indication at all of when that might be, or do they have a plan in place, or is it kind of wait and see for now?
For now, it's kind of wait and see for the time being. So our programs are ready. You know, we have the structure and the infrastructure for everything. as soon as we have a green light, we can start, you know, because mainly like our championship are played on certain fields. You know what I mean? It's not like we have 18 teams on different fields and you have to find the logistics and everything. So we can be ready to launch any competition within 10 days. It all depends on when you get the green light for the Ministry of Sport, of Youth and Sports.
Yep. Okay. Last time we spoke, and I'll take listeners back a little bit. So last time we spoke, the plans in place for this year domestically, you were talking about, you know, two divisions at university level. You're talking about a schools championship in February, and you're talking about the Lebanese Rugby League Club Championship beginning in May. Now, obviously, none of that happened because of COVID-19, or it may have sort of started but then stopped. But are things pretty much on pause and ready to start again once you're able to play? Is that kind of the situation?
Yeah, it is a situation because, like, I'm not sure about the university championship. We might play two division or one. It all depends on the on the university's willingness to participate this year, or say we're gonna hold for 1 year, participate next year. We kind of like always try to find an alternative of organizing maybe nice tournament or some touch tournaments, so we can keep the players and the athletes in the spirit of the game.
Yeah.
This is for the university. For the clubs, clubs should be ready to participate whenever we have a green light, because at the end, according to the law now, if you do any official game, we might be breaking the law, which is we do not want that, and we do not want to get any fines. We cannot handle any fines right now.
Understandable.
So we're ready, and it's all depend on when we get the green light.
Sensational. So, and what are the players doing? Are players training? Are you in dialogue with the clubs? Are they doing to prepare?
Some clubs are training by themselves. Some clubs are like having even universities are some universities are starting to train because they start now around the yesterday actually all the universities started.
Yep.
Some universities are having online courses. So it all depends to see what kind of activity they're allowed to clubs. Some clubs are training by themselves in the gym. Some clubs are training as team training, maybe once a week or twice a week. So there is some activity, but officially it's not like we were used to.
Yeah. And I assume, you know, this is not unique to rugby league. Every sport is in the same boat over there in Lebanon. Am I correct?
Yeah, every sport, because it's not the only problem we're facing with the COVID-19. Also, with the economic situation in Lebanon, it's really paralyzing all the sports. So it's like kind of we have the basketball championship, which is basketball is one of the it's the number one sports in Lebanon. It's been halted because of the economic situation. The football activities also stopped because of the economic and the COVID, both of them of the COVID-19. So
yep.
All the sports in Lebanon are now on hold. The Ministry of Youth and Sports allowed some of the like individual sports like tennis or something like that to have some activity.
Yep.
But team sports, it's still a big no for the Ministry of Youth and Sports.
Yep. It's incredible to see. We see what's going on, or here in Australia, where I am anyway, we obviously know what's going on with our sports. We see what's going on in the US and in parts of Europe, but we don't see this. We don't see what's happening in Lebanon too often. So it's interesting for you to shine that light, and so we can understand that. I wish you well, because
we can't afford to have a bubble championship.
No, it can't be. You can't have a bubble Lebanese federation. Are you guys watching any NRL over there, or is there any way you can do that, or even some Super League? Are you guys able to catch that?
No, I'm not watching these days any activity.
Yeah.
Even though I have the application, but I'm not being able. I'm looking at the scores from time to time.
Yeah. It sounds like you've got other things to worry about as well. So that's obviously. Let's move on to talk a little bit about International Rugby League. And I'll take you back to the last time I saw you, mate, was at the Nines. And what an incredible event that was. And I think you were, like, I spent a little bit of time with you there, and from memory, Lebanon won their first couple of group matches, and you guys were so excited. Like, I had, like, the passion that I saw from yourself, your coaching staff and your players was second to none. And I got to hang around most of the squads during that event. Talk to me a little bit about that event and how important it was, especially considering the sort of international, the rugby league landscape at the time, because there was a lot of controversy around of some of the heritage players versus what you guys were doing. And like you mentioned earlier, a little bit of misunderstanding. So tell us a little bit about how important that Nines tournament was and what it meant to win those first couple of games.
For me, any event that put Lebanon on the world map of any sports, it's something wonderful. Being participating in a championship where you have the giants of the game, and having Lebanon being among those giants, it's something second to none for us. You know what I mean? So standing over there, seeing the Lebanese flag, you know, floating next to the big names of the game, it is the pride of any athlete, or it's the pride of any professional in sport that works in management or coaching or anything.
Yep.
For sport, and beating France, then beating England, that was crazy, man. I was like a kid in a candy store for myself.
Yeah,
you know, watching that game. I always think whenever we have to represent Lebanon, all differences have to be put aside.
Yep.
Anything that might hurt the game should be resolved either in election or behind closed in an open dialogue.
Yep.
Not out on the media, not out of slandering or spreading lies. I'm not going to say the Federation or the Police Office Federation didn't do any mistake, or just, you know, like, they're doing everything right. Everybody works. He's going to do every federation, every person who works, he's going to do a mistake. Remember that Lebanon was, for the first time after 2000 in the World Cup. So it was like a new, it was kind of like a new experience and a new environment.
Yep.
For Lebanon, it's not like it's our like seventh World Cup, and we're repeating the same job or repeating the same mistake. I'm always, as I said before, I'm always open for any dialogue. Anybody who wants to participate to join, but everything has to be done in according to a general plan, to a general understanding, and like, let's have an open mind about how we're going to see the future. We have already placed our strategy for the next 3 or 4 years. Everything should be working according to plan, except, you know, with all the things that happened now, because kind of like changed our, because we have like put some KPIs to measure our job. What happened now kind of like we have to change our KPIs in order to see the progress that we are doing.
Yeah. Yeah.
But again, I said, when Lebanon is playing, all the problems should be put aside and everybody should be working together. We cannot go. I can now on the podcast, use this podcast to speak about the problem, but it's not the way forward. The way forward is finding a solution, not talking back and back and back and back about the problem. This is the way I see it. I would like to use this opportunity to ask anybody who has any problem or anything or any question, I'm willing to sit, discuss everything, and find a solution.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And you were the same when we first spoke on that International Rugby League podcast, and I was amazed to hear it. Or, you know, you opened my eyes, that's for sure, at the time, because all we heard back then here in Australia in particular was some stories from the heritage-based players, your Robbie Farahs, etc. And like you said, there might have been a bit of a misunderstanding there. But what I find interesting, and I shouldn't be surprised, and we sort of spoke about this off-air earlier, but when there was negativity, the press were all over it. You know, Lebanese rugby league was on the back page of newspapers here in Sydney. You know, and since then, there's been an investigation into what happened and into the allegations. And a few weeks ago, it was all proven to be false, and Lebanese Rugby League Federation was, you know, proven to not have done anything wrong there. But none of that was really reported over here in Sydney, and I'm not too sure what it was like anywhere else. But it's not funny. Funny's not the right word for it. But it's just I shouldn't be shocked that negative news makes the back page, but positive news doesn't. And I just wanted to let you speak about that as well. And you know, the findings have come out false. Lebanon, you guys are still in charge of rugby league domestically in Lebanon and the national team. And you mentioned the five-year plan, which is kind of on pause now. But are you able to tell us a little bit about what that plan includes or included, and what we can expect to see from Lebanese rugby league in the next 5 years?
Yep. I can talk about that. Let's start first about the good news and the bad news. Like, the good news never travels, man. Like,
yeah,
I told you before, the Lebanese case were bigger than the Origins.
Yeah,
I guess that's the first time that happened in the in the Australian history. Yep. I guess people sometimes get misinformed. People sometimes get people sometimes like hold grudges or spread some lies. There is a saying that says a lie becomes the truth whenever it's published. So again, I'm not going to go there. I said, like, the federation or the previous federation had done some mistakes during their management, which is something, you know, it's normal, or it's something, it's human.
Yep.
To say about that. People didn't really talk about the international investigation. Maybe because the news doesn't sell more papers or stories or headlines, you know, ads. It is what it is. Let's not look at it. In our plan, what we're planning to do is like to increase the number of the members in Lebanon by increasing clubs, by increasing academies. Now we started working on academies in Lebanon. Hopefully, we're kind of changing the approach, academies to teach rugby league.
Yep.
Here. We're trying to minimize the cost as much as we can, so we can have more places or target more areas.
Yep.
We're preparing for the next World Cup. We are also, like as you said, like the domestic championship. We had like MIA championship we wanted to work on, but it got suspended.
Yep. Yep.
Postponed because the pandemic. Kind of, it's like now it's I don't know, it's like a lot of our plans that we're working on is being kind of like hit a road bump. It's and kind of like we have to wait. We're ready for to go the full way, but we still need to have this green light to start again.
Yep, and that's understandable. You know, the whole world's hit a speed bump. The whole world's on pause in many respects. So I think it just maybe gives you guys a little bit of time to think and prepare and focus on some other things as well. But I want to talk a little bit about the international side, and MEA is postponed and it's happening next year. And we're leading into a World Cup year next year, which is obviously very important. And you're going to be very proud to see Lebanon there once again. But what is the strength of the Lebanese team has always been in the mixture of domestic players and the heritage players from here in Australia. And there's sometimes some interesting feelings between the two sides, and we saw that last year there were some hard feelings, I suppose, as well. But has that been resolved? Like, who do you expect to see most of the heritage players putting their hand up to play for Lebanon at the World Cup next year? And do you think things are resolved in that respect?
Of course, it's going to be a result. First, personally, I hate this word heritage player.
Yep.
For me, they're all Lebanese.
Yep.
Whoever putting on this jersey is a Lebanese.
Yep, I love that.
Besides having a grandparent or being parents Lebanese, like for me, he is a Lebanese. Unfortunately, sometimes the law here is not fair for a woman being a Lebanese and not being giving the nationality to her offspring.
Mm.
I think it's not fair.
Yep.
But for me, all of us are Lebanese, whether we are based in Lebanon or we are based in Australia. As a federation in Lebanon, our job is to develop the game in Lebanon. So sometimes the flair or the finances are going more into the Cedars national team, which is affecting our growth in Lebanon.
Yep.
This is something we should like really consider and to talk about, because like let's say I'm giving like rough or like whatever figures, you know, kind of like,
yep,
we cannot like spend $100,000 on national team and come say we're gonna spend $10,000 on the local league.
Yeah, it doesn't
for
work.
For us, our main job is to develop the game in Lebanon. Our players, our Lebanese players who are based in Australia, we look at them in pride. We are happy when they step up and want to play for Lebanon, for their country. It's not like they're playing for me or for anything. They are playing for their country, the country of their own and the country of their ancestors, if you're going to use the heritage again. But it is something that they have to look into it. I cannot go and spend a lot of money in Australia because it's not my job to develop the game in Australia.
Yep.
I don't have the finances to develop the game in Australia, nor the manpower, nor anything. The Lebanese national team is being sometimes a platform for those Lebanese, our countrymen who are living in Australia, for them, a platform for them to shine and let the professional team see them and see their performance. And we are very happy to provide that. It's not something like we're not happy about. At the end, we, any Lebanese all around the world that do something wonderful, we are proud of them. It's not like we are jealous or of it, you know?
Yep.
Like here in Lebanon, there's this general feeling. If you have like people who are ecstatic when a guy from Lebanese heritage were elected, I guess, the president of the Dominican Republic. So it is kind of like a national pride, you know, for us seeing successful Lebanese doing great around the world. There was this saying before that they used to say like the British Empire British Empire is the empire that never, there's always sun above it.
Yep.
And one guy said the Lebanese people are the only people in the world where there's always sun above them, because we are spread all over the world.
Yep.
You know, somehow we have like 6,000 Lebanese descendants, 6 million Lebanese descendants in Brazil.
Yeah.
Which is a bit like unusual.
Yep.
This is something all Lebanese based in Australia should have a say or have a look at it. Our job is mainly to develop the game in Lebanon, not in Australia. But when our Lebanese players are playing for the national team, we're going to do everything in order to cater their needs, put them in the best environment to represent their country the best way possible. This has always been kind of rift, maybe, but looking forward, it shouldn't be anymore.
Yeah. And so what sort of help do you need from the Australian-based Lebanese here? Because when, I'll take you back to the Nines again, but I remember very vividly, like there were two or three nations outside of Australia who were very well supported, and they were Tonga, Samoa, and Lebanon. There were Lebanese flags everywhere. So like you say, the Lebanese people, whether it's through ancestry or not, they're very similar to the Islander nations over here. They are very proud of their heritage, and Lebanese people are Lebanese people, no matter if they were born there or their parents were born there or their grandparents were born there. I believe that. I've seen that firsthand. So how do you balance out, you know, you mentioned like some figures that you threw out there, and I agree with you, like that shouldn't be the case. Most of the money shouldn't be spent every 4 years. It should sort of be spread out, and we should be helping build rugby league domestically in Lebanon. So what do you need to happen, or what sort of support do you need? How do you see that happening in the future?
I see it by it's not about only financial support. I also see it about more like educational support. I see it also about experience support. I see it maybe have some of the Lebanese foster some of our players that can go practice there, not like with the not with NRL team, maybe like first like second division or third division teams, you know, like help them build more experience. Having people come play here in Lebanon, maybe having people supporting the local clubs that are in Lebanon.
Yeah.
Maybe by buying their jerseys online or anything, you know, kind of like, or like any, if we can have memorabilia or training shirts or anything, like showing different support for those teams, because like, as if those people are also supporting like the, let's say like the Lebanese Rugby League Federation social media.
Yep.
Also help those team, also help those, the local clubs by supporting, maybe adding follow to some of the local clubs, you know, on their social media code, because of those clubs can get better sponsorship deals, can get more. It's all about like, there's a lot of way they can support, not just financially,
yeah,
emotionally, shares, anything. It would be great. It would be great because, like local club, you won't believe, like some of the local club annual budget is around maximum $10,000.
Mm.
A lot of them, unfortunately, live in very, very like, it's not the best economic situation, and they go there, they play the game. You know what I mean? Kind of like it used to be the clash of the classes in England when the game started. A lot of them, maybe they have to work. If they get injured, they have to stop working.
Yeah.
Those kind of stuff, supporting, like I would say, if they can support the local clubs, help support the local clubs, it would be great. It would be great to help support the local clubs. I'm not asking for financial support for the federation or anything. We all know that when the Cedars step on the field, we're going to have thousands of people, if not 100,000 of people, cheering for our country.
Yeah.
But also we need support for the local clubs, for the local players, because maybe not in 5 to 10 years we can have professional players coming out from Lebanon. Hopefully we can, being a bit realistic. But if we can support our local clubs, and so we can have better clubs, a better environment for our players based in Lebanon, it would be huge.
It's a great point. And I say it all the time, we need visibility. We need to see, you know, the sport being played everywhere. And that's what this podcast is all about, telling people about what's going on, things they didn't know were happening, and shining a light on those things. Nayef, I'm going to ask you to, after we get off the phone here, if you can share with me maybe the Facebook or social media pages of each of the clubs. I'll share those, and I'll encourage our listeners to go and follow each of those and show their support that way, because I think that's a great idea, mate. And yeah, it's a good start anyway. Mate, there's been plenty to talk about, lots of negative, lots of positive as well, though. I think the future's actually bright for Lebanese Rugby League, and you had a court case, which we joke around and say that once the Rugby League Federation has had their court case and won, that they're truly a Rugby League Federation, and you guys have been through it. And, mate, is there anything before we do go that you wanted to share? And of course, we'll share the links to the Beirut Explosion Foundation as well. But is there anything else you wanted to share before we end this fascinating discussion?
No, I'm going to reiterate on the point that we need to stick together. We are a very emotional people. We are Lebanese people are very emotional. They are driven by their emotions, which is something great. But sometimes it's kind of like we rush into conclusion. So again, we are here in the Federation, and me personally, I'm ready to discuss any problem, to find a solution, not to create other problems, in order to have a better game, a better future for the game, and be hopefully progress more and more in the international competition. Hopefully this year we can go to the semi-final. Last year we were in the quarterfinals, so hopefully this year we can
go one step further
to the semi-final. Yeah, step further. Always dream big. Semi-final, final. Hopefully win it. It's going to be tough. You know, like there was this Italian coach that used to coach a club in Serie A. Once he suspended his player for saying, "I came to play," he said, "You should have said, we came to win."
Yeah.
So we always play to win. We always play to entertain the people. We always play to raise our flag high and high. And this is what should count. Not tiny details. No problems, no anything. And especially after what's happening in Lebanon, with the crisis, with the pandemic, with the explosion, we need to be more united than ever, and give the best image, or as should I say, the real image of Lebanon, not the stereotyped image of our country.
Yeah, that's beautiful, mate. It's very well said, and thank you for joining me. To tell your story once again. Hopefully we get to speak again soon. Maybe we'll get to see each other at a World Cup or another World Nines event or something like that. I really hope that happens. And, mate, I wish you all the best. Hopefully the competition...
You should come and visit our country, man.
The World Cup. I would love to.
We'll give you an amazing experience here in Lebanon. We have some amazing food, amazing places to go. We have good beaches, not like the Australian one, but we have good beaches also. You'll experience the Mediterranean Sea. You'll experience some of the lovely places in the mountains, man. Also, I would like to take this opportunity to invite people to come to Lebanon, because if they come to Lebanon, they can support our economy and support the country overall.
Mate, that would be sensational. I'm going to accept that invitation once the world goes back to normal a little bit and we can travel a little bit more. But
Of course.
Naif Abisad, it's been incredible as always, mate. I look forward to speaking to you again, and thank you for chasing kangaroos with me.
Thank you.